So, Jack, our second interview for Jetzt TV. So,
yep.
Suffering. Let's talk about suffering today.
That's a nice topic. Okay. Why not? Something familiar to all humanity, all living things, I think. Identification with individuality, coupled with I don't want to feel like this. Suffering becomes potent when you don't want it. Whereas the pain, whether it be physical, emotional, mental, spiritual, energetic, the pain becomes less if it's like, if it's noticed without a desire for it to leave. It's just noticed, okay, there's pain. It lessens, it doesn't register as my experience. And the effect is much less. It's just extraordinary how the mind can amplify or reduce its experience depending on whether identification is there, depending on whether desire is there. It's extraordinary how the perception of reality can change totally when these things are present or absent. And so the easy one to check this out with is, you know, you've got a physical pain someplace. And the worst type, I think, the type that is most potent for identification is when there's a pain in your head, be it a toothache or a migraine or pain in your eye or your ear. Something in the head always seems to be more susceptible to bringing in identification. If there's like, I have a pain in my head, the pain in your head will get bigger. If there is a pain in the head, if a pain in the head is happening, and I know language sounds a bit nutty, but that's the best we've got. There's a pain in, you know, God, there's a pain here. Even to say something like that, like, okay, there's a pain here right now. No more story about it. And if internally there's no more story about it, it's just a pain in the head. There's no, what am I going to do to get rid of it? Oh, I have this for ages. I get these often. The story doesn't roll out into a big scenario of drama. It's just a pain in the head. It comes, it goes. Like everything else. It's just going to pass through. And then there's nothing sticky to it. So somehow it tends to be less pronounced and doesn't last as long. So when there is physical pain, particularly pain from the neck up, watch for, is it my pain? Or is there just pain happening? That's step one. Step two is don't run a desire for it to leave. If you want to take an aspirin or a paracetamol or whatever one takes. If you take that, you take that. There will be a movement to take that sometimes even without desire. It's like, whoa, this got to do something about this. It's like drinking water when you're thirsty. Sometimes it's not, I have to quench this thirst. Sometimes there's thirst and water comes. Sometimes there's pain and a resolution for the pain comes. So I'm not talking avoiding treatment. That's not what I'm talking about. It's about the relationship with the pain internally in terms of, is it my pain and do I want this state to be different right now? These are the two things that will amplify it and give it legs. When these things are active, it's my pain and I want to get rid of it. Bingo, we have suffering. That's the recipe for suffering. That's the recipe for suffering.
So what's the recipe for not suffering?
Yeah, be fine with pain. The difference between pain and suffering, you see. Pain, discomfort, on any level. Your heart is broken or there's grief or loss or some emotional horror that's going on, or your child is really sick, or, you know, something that just pulls at your heartstrings. When there's something like this going on, it's like, okay, this is an event that's going on in life. Watch for the desire for it to be better. Watch for it. If that desire isn't fueled by your attention, it will be an unrest that's experienced. It will be an unusual phenomenon that's gone on in your life. It's just an experience being had. Where if it's like, I need this to get better. I want to control this situation. I don't want it to be like this. Now you suffer. Now you suffer. This is the difference. This is the difference.
So just watching the desires that come in painful or uneasy situations.
Yeah. 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 This is the difference. This is the line between pain and suffering. This is the line. Because suffering, there is always someone who suffers. Always. That's the thing about suffering. I'm suffering. It has to be there with ownership. Suffering doesn't happen without ownership. The difference. There's a pain in the body. There's a pain. The energy body is having a tough time. Yeah, the heart is broken. But something, without the I'm suffering because I want it to be controlled in some way, I want this to be different. Without that story, mind will ease off the dramatic aspect of it. And an understanding of the transient nature of all things happen. An understanding of, okay, this is going to leave when it's going to leave. Let's see what happens. And something lighter, a lighter attitude kicks in. Because mind is going to run some story about it. But if it's not all about me and I need it to disappear, the story will be about, will be truer in terms of having a broader perspective. That this is an event in life. And it happens to this one or not this one. So what? Happening, it's happening now. It's just an experience being had. And the kind of understanding that arises then is understanding the transient nature of all things. This comes and this will go when it will go. And something is lighter about it. Something is stays light. And it's in our nature to be light. You know?
So it's lighter and there is no energy invested in suffering.
Yeah. Suffering doesn't happen then. It just doesn't happen.
And it doesn't help to solve the situation anyhow.
Oh, not at all. Suffering is sure. It's optional, you know? It's optional and it certainly doesn't help anything at all because the deeper you go into suffering, the more you have to pull back out of it. Because the story will get dense and serious. Once there's suffering happening, whoa, it's solid. And now this is the issue that's at play. Rather than the wider perspective of, yeah, this is just one thing that's happening. What else is happening right now? You know, there's always a myriad of things. You know, one is always breathing. One can use the senses. There's life happening. But it's not, whoa, all about me, which is what the ego will have to do. So suffering and the ego, well, you know, that's they're in bed together. Being very cozy. Making something new, a me story. You know, yeah. And outside, or outside? No, let me find a better word. Beneath all of this, there is a resting place for mind. For example, you've got a toothache and it's like, whoa, okay, I need this to go. Hold on now. Let's just drop the dessert. There's a toothache. All right. We'll take a painkiller and see if it'll work. Or we'll make a dental appointment. Or let's ignore it and see what happens. Okay, we'll have no desire for the toothache to go. And you can play with this. And you'll find that, it's okay. But your mind will be trying to grasp something. The mind will want to go towards, I need this to go, suffering is all about me, this is a great distraction because it's in contrast to what was happening before the toothache. And contrast is really interesting because it brings up the dualistic, now it's like this and it was like this, and mind will always look for diversity because it thinks that's entertaining. So when mind is doing this, moving towards suffering and all about me, like, you know what, there's a resting place where mind can be pulled back to, can be anchored in. It's a technique, but it's very useful. And the technique is about being content, training mind to be content. So mind will want to go someplace. And I suppose in other cultures, it's about like use a mantra, focus on your breath. All these tricks are there. But there's something about, you know what, mind, just be content. Be content. It's actually an easy enough one to train your mind to just be content. Because it's a desireless state. It's like an attitude emanates from there, rises up from being content. An attitude of like, well, actually, I'm all right. That's what's happening. That's out there. That's the world. That's in the 3D dimension. That's in the story realm. But there is contentment happening within or at a deeper level. And if attention is on that being content, it puts the dualistic world in a little bit in the background. It moves a little bit closer to being the movie on a screen that it really is. There isn't a you who's inside in the movie and the movie is all around me. It's, woof. It's just that natural pulling back because mind can just, hey, you know, mind, just be content. Oh no, I want the toothache to go. It's like, you know what, just be content. That's desire. Be content. And then there's a distance between, okay, the body is feeling pain. All right, let's see if we can sort out this pain for the body. Not for me, for the body. And somehow, when contentment is developed, it offers a resting place for mind, which is not anywhere near the zone of the all about me. It's not anywhere near desire or the ego. So it's a great little trick. It brings mind to a place of, oh, something to do, but being content but no desire there. A mind can actually get used to it. It really can, quite easily. Just be content. You just need something. It's like a dog. It's going to chew the furniture if you don't give it something to chew. So let mind be content. Find a desire rising up because the ego says, whoa, I want to be the center of the universe. It's like, yeah, and we'll just go back now to being content. Go back and just be content. Be content. Because right now, if you actually think about it, right now, what do you need? Right now.
Never anything.
Really never need anything. You know, if you say, no, I need more money, it's like, right now, you're watching something online, right now, you don't need your bank account to be different, you don't need anything right now, you need a cup of coffee, actually, you know, right now, you probably don't, right now.
So the needs are projections.
Indeed. Constantly, just to keep the show going, just for fun. And they're fine. But don't follow them. Don't follow the hypnosis that the need is actually going to make you happy. You must have seen by now, the whole world who's doing this work, must have seen that, you know, whatever makes me happy only lasts for a while. I mean, that's got to be seen. If you're on this path, that's got to be seen. It lasts for a while. And then there's the next thing that makes me happy. And things that bring pleasure or pain, they're fine, they keep happening. But know that the pleasure and pain actually isn't where it's at. What you're really looking for is a bit of peace. What you're really looking for is rest outside of all of it. And if you don't believe me, check it out. You know? Check it out, really. It's to be desireless. That's what's delicious. Like if you're lying there in somebody's arms and you don't want anything, the pleasure isn't because you're lying in somebody's arms, it's because the desire has stopped. It's because desire has stopped. That's what the pleasure is, being desireless. But mind will say, oh no, it's because I got what I was looking for, because I feel love or whatever. And mind will label it, trying to control it, to set up the, you know, the roller coaster for the next desire. You know, something else can be better than this. Like, what a game. It's fantastic. What a game. You got to hand it to a creation, you know. It's pretty amazing. And there's no need to get caught in any of it, you know. Life is going to happen, and normal things continue. But so what? So what? Like, it just changes in events, and yeah, people get pissed off, and people like you, and people don't like you, and they're nice, and they're not nice, and things work your way, and things don't work your way, and welcome both. Welcome everything and its opposite, all of it. Like, they're all the same. They're all the same. You know?
Yeah, but even being nice, or people are nice or not so nice, who makes this distinction? Where does it come from? It's me.
Yes. Yes, it's me. Yeah. The ego likes to be, you know. Oh, you're lovely. You're wonderful. You've changed my life, you know. Ego likes this garbage, you know. So it can get fat again, you know. It's like, oh dear. You know, falling for that old story. Because the opposite one will come to balance it out, you know. It's how it works. How it works. It's lovely how it balances, you know, it's lovely.
And even suffering has some positive aspects. So when you tell about your pain, and then you will get the attention of others.
Yes. And it allows you to have something going on, you know, something that's valid, because maybe it's in every culture, I'm not sure. But when we seem to have space for, if somebody's suffering, then the correct response is to be compassionate and not ignore it, not be sarcastic, not be dismissive of somebody's suffering. Give them the space. And that's being nice or Christian or compassionate, or I don't know. I mean, it seems to be a cultural phenomenon that we respect suffering. We respect suffering. It's like, why? Why, you know?
Good question.
Yes. Human pain happens. All right, human pain happened. Okay, but the suffering part, what on earth gave that value? You know, it's good to suffer. Suffer little children who come into me, this biblical stuff. Is it that got twisted? Or no pain, no gain? It's out there in the media, you know. If you don't sweat and burn, you're not going to get fit. And it's like, really? You know that there has to be pain. Everything worthwhile you have to work hard for. But these messages are everywhere. You know, and gosh, really? Life is much easier, actually. It's much easier. It does its own thing. It just flows. There's effort involved in some things, but suffering? Not at all. If suffering has to happen to get you somewhere, hey, revisit that idea. Have another look.
That's a good one.
But if I'm suffering, you see, it's like, yeah, I'm determined, and there's a whole contraction, and it's yuck. There's a whole contraction around, well, I gotta do this, and I, you know, I'm aiming for this, and I don't mind going through this pain, and it's like, gosh, okay, let effort happen. The suffering part, you know, pull out the eye, and effort happens, and that's fine. And there might or might not be a result. That can go either way. But yeah, sure, effort happens. But holding up something as really sacred just because it's suffering? I wonder about that. Being there for a friend, being there for, you know, somebody who's falling apart. Not because they're suffering, but just be there for them if that's what the flow is.
Yeah.
But don't zone in on the suffering because you want their suffering to go. Huh? Really? You want their suffering to go. That level of ego attention will actually make the sufferer suffer more. Because it's combining a perspective of, oh, suffering is awful and you shouldn't be feeling like this, with I'm suffering and I don't want to feel like this, and watch my story. And lo and behold, we're compounding that perspective. And so the dualistic perspective gets stronger. We have more suffering. Hooray! It's crazy, huh? It's wonderful. Wonderful how it works. Self-fulfilling, self-perpetuating. And I'm not talking about dismissing suffering, because that's the same thing. Dismissing and endorsing. Yeah, they're the same thing, you know? It's not what this is about at all. It's about, you know, understand what suffering is and peel that back. Peel back the suffering bit. Now what's really going on? Can you help somebody who's, you know, suffering? Not because they're suffering, but can you help them or not? If you can, you can. If you can't, back off, you know?
My experience is that just being present is the best that can be done.
Yeah. Yeah. Because then the suffering has nothing to dance with. It's just being witnessed. And so if it doesn't dance with one's own, oh, that's terrible, and how did that happen to you? And, oh, you know, if there isn't a dance with the suffering, it doesn't gain more momentum. It's just being witnessed. So it has to spin out. Well, you're bang on. That's definitely an approach that allows it to lose its momentum.
Mm. So then the stillness in the presence expands, meets the suffering and brings it to rest.
Yes.
Contagious.
Yes, if one is willing to drop the suffering. But if one, I mean, the talking about the sufferer now, not the one who's holding that still point. If the sufferer is getting a lot of mileage, getting a lot of juice out of being the victim, if that story is really potent and not ready to be dropped, the stillness will be interpreted as no compassion at all. You have no compassion at all. You were just sitting there. Why didn't you at least help me? Or why didn't you at least see the pain I was in? It's like, oops. And this can happen too, you know, that there's an expectation that suffering must be met with an endorsement of how awful it is, you know?
Yeah.
And so if the victim really needs to get stronger, it's going to reject the stillness. But if someone really is ready to drop that perspective of all about me and my suffering, the still point is contagious. Contagious. Yeah. It's used to being content and the whole thing is avoided.
So cultivate being content.
Why not? It's an easy one. It's an easy one. It shuts off all desire without going into the story of desire and shutting it off. It's like, here's a little shortcut. Be content. Just be content.
So noticing that suffering is on the rise, and then, oh, be content.
Yes.
That's the movement then.
Yes. Just be content. Like, okay, well then there's pain someplace, or there's a bad feeling, or, you know, there's a loop running in your head. It's like, hold on, be content. That's just the mind running an old story. It's going to spin out, you know. Just be content behind, beneath all of that. Pull back from the event. Be content.
And then from that space of being content, action can be taken.
Yes.
toothache, you go to the dentist or do whatever.
Yeah. Yeah.
In peace and rest.
Yeah. Things are in perspective again, as just events that come and go. They're not fueled by desire to control. And from the place of content, for some, the outside of all of it, an opening happens. But it really doesn't matter, you know? It really doesn't matter. This dualistic game is about managing mind, really. Choose the scene or not, that's just, that's going to happen or not. Pulling away from identification, this is what you can do. This is what you could do. You can't make the truth appear. Thankfully that can't be controlled.
I'm always wondering what can be controlled. There was a long time when I believed there is no control at all.
Yeah.
But when we talk about this movement of going to that content place, it almost seems like being control.
Yes, it does, doesn't it? It plays like this. It's an appearance. Because mind will imagine whatever you can do. Well, if you can do something out of choice, then you have that much control. And I know in one of Ramana Maharshi's talks, whether or not if something was lost in translation, there's always that possibility. But he said, what you can do is you can manage your mind. But even that is an organic happening in consciousness. Even that. And the sense of you being able to do something control about it is a happening in consciousness too. That sense comes in to give you the idea that you can do something about it. I suppose with practice or with time or with wisdom, or you can see these layers at play. Yeah, it looks like, it feels like, I can decide to be content. So yeah, it does, it looks like and it feels it. It does. You really got power over it? Really? Autonomous power? Over nothing! You're not even there! What the heck is deciding, you know? It's just this piece of software that's a bundle of conditions in any moment. It's just this random, well, random and not so random. Apparently random, but really not, because there are particular influences that are playing in any moment, you know? So...
Yeah, I mean the whole evolution is behind. There's the learning curve of the whole evolution to keep the bodies alive. To a certain extent, there the randomness stops. It's not.
Yeah.
That's
and now the evolution has. Sorry, I interrupted you there. The evolution has speeded up. Since the industrial age, really, you know, and we're moving at such a pace, we won't be able to evolve, because we evolve so slowly. Gosh, we're so primitive, it's scary, you know. But yet there's this real advancement around machinery and technology. And so we're going to have to mutate. We'll have to mutate from now on. Evolution is too slow, so evolution will be through mutation, you know. And it's like, gosh, where will that go? Where will that go, you know? I mean... You know, and the swing towards machines, and there will be a swing away from machines as well, because the price will be very high, because, you know, we're organic, you know, we're organic. Like, gosh, will we lose all of that organicness? Will we lose it all? What would happen then, you know? It's funny to see in terms of the linear time, the movement of humankind as a race. You know? An exciting time. Yeah.
In general, when we look at human beings, they are born as children. Supposedly, the brains are more or less empty. Then they get conditioned in the early childhood. So they start with a set of standard programs. Then they challenge the adults who were programmed at another time. Then there is a conflict between the generations, which creates new creativity and new solutions and helps keeping the balance. I mean, what an intelligent mechanism. It's unbelievable.
Yes, there's incredible intelligence. In the blossoming of a flower, there's such intelligence. And when you look at how this illusion works,
these structures,
the arising and the falling of an ego, and how it feeds in, and the merging of energy and the conflict of energy constantly. It's like it works smoothly and it clashes. It works smoothly and it clashes, and it has to be like this. This is duality. Yeah. Yeah, and I guess there is that idea, which is false, that once the truth is seen, everything goes smoothly then. And it's like the perspective about what's smooth and what's not smooth changes. That's all. The perspective. The position of, how things are interpreted, how things are seen, they're seen for what they really are. But life continues to look the same from the outside, It doesn't guarantee anything. All consciousness takes care of itself. It does. It does all the time. It's just that you can't see it. If you believe in the illusion, you can't see it. But consciousness is taking care of it just as much now as it will post when the truth is seen.
That's the difference. Yeah, the only thing is it's not seen. Yeah.
No. That's right, it's not seen. That's right. It's a shift in perception, really. And a knowing that whatever perception at play is still within the illusion, no matter how clear the perception, it's still an illusory perception. Still. As long as the body is alive, it's still an illusory perception. So there's no stickiness to the perception because there's no one there to stick to it, to own it. It's just perception.
It is what appears. It is just...
Yes.
This appears now. Nothing objective. It is just appearing in this and over there. And like mirroring. Mirror. Uh-huh. Only mirrors all around.
That's right.
No controller, just watches, just mirrors.
Yeah, just mirrors. Yeah. Just mirrors. Yeah, and then we can overlay that with unity consciousness, because let's say consciousness is just made up of mirrors. What it's doing is like an enormous octopus. Let's say consciousness is an octopus, and on every one of the eight tentacles it has a mirror. Just looking on like this. Oh, I've got a circular thing. Oh, no, I haven't. I've got a long thing. I'm like, it's all you. These are just the mirrors. These are just the perspectives that you're zoning in on, It's all you.
But even calling it me,
Yes, of course.
That's already...
That's the unity part.
Even calling it unity. Calling it unity is so beyond. But whatever you call it, it is not. It is not at the same time.
It is in manifestation, but in essence, it's not.
So suffering does not exist. It's made up.
Sure, nothing exists. Nothing at all exists. The idea of nothing doesn't even exist. It's a joke. It's a wacky, fantastic joke.
What I would say, the only thing that I know, I don't know who, but there seems to be something. That's as much as I could potentially say.
How do you mean something? There seems to be something.
There's movement. Something, but what it is, no clue. Obviously, there is some movement now, here. So,
it is. What's its essence? What's the essence of that movement?
Perceptions on our sides, just perception.
And what's the essence of perception?
Movement. When we say nothing, we have the image of dark, empty space. But even the space is not nothing.
But scientifically, the movement, the essence of all of it, can be brought back to space. It's just space. You know, it's like it's the most subtle form of the appearance if we go to physics, isn't it? It's just. There will just be space there. When you break it up, it's just space. So phenomenally, you can say, okay, we can reduce it to space. No, you're saying no?
In physics, they once asked Albert Einstein, if you should summarize your theory of relativity in one sentence. And he said, in the earlier times, with Newtonian physics, we believed that when we take away all the matter out of the universe, time and space will remain.
Okay.
Now, with the theory of relativity, even time and space will go with the matter. So even space is bound to matter. So they are not independent.
Yes. Okay. Okay. Yes, because it's... Yes. Okay.
Space without matter doesn't make sense.
Okay. But if you break down the atom, that's where I was going with it. If you break it down, there's actually just space in there. Because
it cannot be touched. It cannot be touched. The concept, of matter even is an idea already.
Yes, it is. So breaking down the concepts as fine as they can go, where do you go prior to matter then? Where do you go prior to space? Where do you go prior to time?
No idea. No clue. No clue. Nobody knows.
So how do you know then that it's not just set up a concept, that there is and outside of all of it, that's non-phenomenal, non-spiritual, non-conceptual?
There are concepts. But even
a
that
concept,
is not...
there is beyond concept.
It's not known what it is, but there seems to be something, at least. So that's what I said. There seems to be something going on. But it cannot be described. It can. Human language is good. You can describe experiences. You can describe perceptions, memories, perceptions. One can agree on certain words. But what actually happens, is no idea. Bad news is, I don't understand anything. The good news is I don't have to understand anything. And even discussing about duality, non-duality is already on the realm of concepts.
Yes, of course. And duality is just another concept. But outside of all of it is not knowable. It's not knowable.
Yes. And even inside is not knowable,
Yeah.
Sure. Because there is no outside and no inside.
There's no outside and inside.
More concepts.
Yes. But there seems to be a resonance at some other level. That's like an echo in this realm. An echo of none.
Now what I find when I look really deep, the best I can say is there's just a cloud of pure joy, and this cloud of pure joy fills everything and forms the apparent objects. Whatever it may be. In the essence, it feels like joy.
Mm-hmm.
And I have a suspicion, so when we talk it biologically, probably it is just the survival, the bottom line of the survival mechanism in the physical body that is touched. Further, I cannot go.
Yes.
With the perception, yeah? I can perceive this, yeah? But further I cannot go. Just in this joy.
Yes.
It's over, yeah?
Yes.
Beyond that concept.
Okay. So that's as far as perception can go. So what about resonance?
Resonance is already an expression, is a form that is created out of this joy. So resonance would be a form. The joy is prior to any form.
Okay. But joy is a concept. It's already well in there.
Of course.
It's well in there in terms of the arising of consciousness, you know, consciousness has arisen and we've got something.
Yeah, of course. Mm-hmm. But to see behind the joy or outside it.
You can't see it, you see, because that's perception trying to go there.
Yeah, it is, and otherwise it is an abstraction. It's another concept. You can call it whatever you want.
But in not calling it something,
I could call it. I don't know. I would call it. I don't know.
Yes. But beyond the intellect, an echo.
Not knowable.
An echo. A resonance. And I know you see resonance further into the sequence. I'm trying to find a word that's a pointer towards like pure knowing, which is not where something is known. Pure knowledge, where there isn't something known. The essence of these things beyond prior to form. Those pointers. You see, by using language, we're diluting it too much. But yet, it is known. But known beyond any intellectual anything. A certainty that is absolutely, has become a concept, but it's totally, in its essence, is not a concept. It's not a concept. What I am is totally not this. What I am is not here at all. What I am knows nothing about this movie. Like, nothing. And there's a certainty about that. That, see, even if I say there's a certainty about it, it makes it a concept and blah, blah, blah. Okay, so I'm probably just confusing that. Maybe I'll just stop talking.
No, but I would say there is only this cloud fundamentally in the essence. Maybe that is that is a way of putting it.
Yes.
This joy in essence.
In essence, yes.
And there is no need about being someone or being somewhere. That's already far, far deep in the story. So not touching anything, not even the joy.
Yes, not even the joy. Yes,
it's already a mirroring. When the level of joy. The movie is already
on.
So no need to touch anything, no need to control anything, no need to believe that anything is wrong. So this, no need that anything has to be named. There is no need, I don't know, for anything at all.
No, there's no need at all, but these things happen in the appearance.
Exactly.
And they're fine. And they're fine.
So contentment is no need. It's the same.
Yes, it's the same thing. It's just things of the world, you know. The world trying to make the world a better place, you know, and that's the movement. That's life.
Yeah.
The movement, you know, it'll always do that. That's what keeps it going.
Yeah.
In linear time and well, the movement, it's like trying to make it better. That's what love does, you know, that's to make it better.
So there's no need thing. There's no need thing probably can be called nirvana. I mean, this is not you. I mean.
Yes. Already complete. Already. Finished, already all over, wrapped up.
That's another tricky one when we talk about this already all over. Trying to describe the timeless with time.
Linear time stretches something that's actually not of time at all, you know. So if you have to put it into time, It's done. It has to be done. The rest of it is just stretching it out and putting your perception within time in order to say it's coming or whatever. Actually, it's
developing. Evolving.
It has to be done.
So no need to suffer?
It's optional.
It's optional?
It's optional.
Suffering is optional.
Yes. The ego wants to do that dance. That's available to it. But no, it's completely and totally a learned mechanism. It's just the ego at play, turning an experience into suffering. The ego is the thing that does it.
Supported by adrenaline and other body stuff. Again, no control. If the adrenaline level is high, no control. No one can control the adrenaline level. But perhaps one can, or the system can collect experience. Now the suffering may start, and whoop, hold on, be content. But again,
just be content. It's like it's a bit smoother than observe, you know, because that one is a great starting point. That's where you have to start, really, is like just observe your thoughts, get some handle on that position mentally where mind is watching mind, you know? And it's just a bit further back to be content. It gives mind a place to hang, really.
A resting place, huh?
Yeah. It's a useful tool. You know? It's worth trying out. Just be content. Stops a whole load of story. Stops all the expectations. Stops all the desires. Be content. It's like woof. the air came out of the All About Me story. You know, just be content.
And then another one that I love to play with is just be still and watch your breath.
Yes, it's always there, going in and out.
Put the attention on the breath.
Not interfering with it. Just watching.
Yeah, just watching. Noticing.
Yeah.
It,
huh? Yeah. For some people, when they watch their breath, they you know, mind gets in there and the controller interferes with it, you know? So it's like, just come back just a little bit. It's happening automatically. Trust it. Trust it. So it's a major participation.
And it's a good place for the attention to be.
Indeed.
And then the objection comes from the mind. It cannot be that simple. That's not. No, it can be. Just cultivate it.
It is. It is.
2 minutes when stress comes. 2 minutes is enough. Half a minute, just.
Touching.
It makes a change. It makes a change. Play with it. So be content, watch the breath,
yes.
The tools are all in us.
Yes, and whatever pain on any level is happening, it's like there's no need for it to be suffering, there's no need for it to be suffering, unless you have a value for suffering, and then you run a dance with suffering, you're trying to get something out of the suffering, and you go into suffering. If you want to get something out of it, to make the ego fatter, that's the game. Everything else just comes and goes, and it's all right. Be content, things pass. Just another experience, let it be had. They're all valid. Welcome the good ones and the awful ones. They're fine, they're the same. It's just experience being had. Yeah, I like and I dislike commentary. If it's there, just, yeah, I hear you. You don't want this experience and you want that experience. That's okay. Just be content. Just be content.
What really is so crazy for me about it is with cultivating this, the efficiency at work became so much better. That's for me the most solid argument. When you really cultivate this, the efficiency at work becomes much better because no energy is burned in these suffering exercises.
The extra mind games. There's a focus, there's a streamlining of energy. It's a good carrot, isn't it?
It feels about like factor of 10 or so, so orders of magnitudes. It feels like have been gained by this, or lost energy have been saved. That's the way it feels here. It's absolutely amazing and exciting and so simple.
Divine efficiency, they call it.
Yeah.
And the thing is to the noticing that there is an efficiency. But if there is a desire for the efficiency, we're back in the game again.
Mm.
Yeah. So one could say, oh, I'll focus on that because I'll be more efficient. And it's like, whoa, missed the point. Someone missed the point then. Huh? It's just a perceived consequence. Huh?
Yeah, you left already the point of contentment. Huh?
Yes. Efficiency will make it better. Like, oh, hold on. What's wrong with the first place? What's wrong?
No.
What needs to be improved on? One improved manifestation is kind of perfect.
Be content. Back
be
again.
Content.
Do not support any desire whatsoever. This
yes.
For the mind, this is absolutely paradox.
Yes.
But that's it. Then the perception comes, meets the history which is stored in the physical form, conflict, and then a drama may arise, but at the same moment back to content and it all collapses.
Yes.
And then the physical form goes with what is. In the flow.
Yes. And pure perception may show itself. Because there's perception through the filter of conditioning, through the all about me, through the, you know, whatever is running in that moment, the conditions. And with contentment, pure perception can show itself. Because this filter isn't determining the perception.
Yeah.
It's just pure perception. Mm-hmm. Simple.
Hmm. The end is utterly simple. Just about trusting contentment. It's not believing in contentment, it's more like trust. Yeah? The churches talk about beliefs. Yeah? As soon as there is a belief, there is a desire. It's synonymous. And then this means automatically suffering.
Yes.
Trusting is a little bit a different quality. Yeah? Just, but there is already almost smelly because.
Yes.
There might be someone or something to trust in. Yeah?
Yes, that's right.
So the place to trust in is contentment. Yeah?
Yes,
if there is any. Yeah?
Yeah. It's like moving. Yeah, that's right. Because like trusting or allowing, it's like, oh, no, no, we're very close to dualistic perspective there now. We're very close to that.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah. Just let mind hang out in being content.
Nothing more to be said, nothing more to be done.
There never was.
Yeah.
And there action never will be, but this is the, this is just the story, this is the movie.
Action happens.
Action happens, sure, that's the game. The movement will always be there, that's the game.
So now we can be children and play the game.
Huh? Yes! Oh, it's a joke, the whole thing is a joke. Yeah, it's all a joke.
Done for today? Nothing comes?
No, nothing comes. Nothing comes right then. All of them. All of them. And no matter the happening, no matter the density or the gravity of the story, it's just a story. Just it'll be okay. Be content anyway. This will always happen. It's not the issue. They don't have the power to rock you. Happenings don't have, they don't touch you at all. They don't touch what you are. So all you can do is just put mind in a place where it's not so susceptible. Falling into the identification traps which creates it. Let mind hang out and being content. And know that you are none of it. You are none of it.
Mm.
None of this is happening to you. It cannot be.
Mm.
It's just a long dream. Yeah, there we go, huh?
Yeah.
Fun to chat as always.
Yeah. Thanks, Jack. That was will be a nice one, I guess. Huh? I like it.
Yeah, it was fun, huh? Yeah. Yeah, these things are nice to do.
Meeting in this space
Mm.
is a gift, yeah.
Oh, it's a